Good morning again. I've got a quick intro and then we will get to it. The Lord speaks a lot about generational blessings and curses. In Deuteronomy 1:8, it says, "Behold, I have set the land before you. Go in and possess the land before you. Go in and possess the land which the Lord swore unto your fathers." But in Leviticus 26, he talks about wiping out the people Canaan because their fathers had sinned. One of the hardest but most rewarding things we did as a couple was to evaluate honestly what blessings and curses had been passed to us, and then deciding what we wanted to pass on to our kids and grandkids. It will be a theme throughout our testimony.
I'm Adriel. I am the oldest child of Tom and Seal Harden. If you were here a couple months ago or you were watching online, you got to hear their testimony. It's pretty evident from their testimony that my grandfather or my father's side of the family sent down a lot of blessings toward us. My great-grandfather was a Baptist preacher, and he and his wife not only raised their own children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, but also my dad and his siblings as well. On the other side, my mom's family passed down a lot of curses. You can go look up my mom's testimony for the full list of all the things that happened to her and within her family. And I really admire and love my mom because she did a lot of work to break a lot of those cycles. She broke some of the biggest ones. She broke the alcoholism in the family. She broke the physical abuse in the family. And she worked very hard to break some of the softer abuses of emotional and verbal and mental abuse as well. So I was born into a preacher's family, and we were missionaries more than we were preachers. Especially growing up, we were gone from Mission Boulevard more than we were here. But whenever we came here, it was a great refreshing, not only for my parents, but also for us kids, because we knew this was home, and we knew this is where the Lord placed us, but we also knew we had a job somewhere else. And my parents did an excellent job in really letting us know that the Lord loved us very much and he wanted us personally to be with him, and then raising us in his truth. We've teased before that my dad had us when we were little kids, and he told us that God was the best thing in the world. And then my mom had us as teenagers, and she taught us how to think about the entire rest of the world through the lens of the Bible and God's truth. And that was definitely invaluable. That is a blessing that I can only hope and pray that I'm passing on to my children effectively, because it set the stage for a lot of the things that have happened in our marriage, that I can honestly sit down and evaluate what's going on around us and what's going on in our lives and say, okay, this is what the Bible has to say about that. This is what's truth, and this over here is Satan's manipulation and his lies. I got saved at 7 in one of my father's many sermons at Pine Bluff. I got baptized in the creek that we had on our church land down there. It was April and the spring thaw, and it was freezing, and I lost a flip-flop. When I was 12, I made another profession of faith when we were back living in here. Jeannie Champagne was my Sunday school teacher, and she preached a lesson, and I made another profession. It wasn't until later that I really analyzed both of those and realized I did get saved at 7, because there was fruit from that one almost immediately. There were a lot of things that changed in my life at 7 that I can look back and say, okay, that's when I got saved, and 12 years old was more of a rededication. There were many more rededications over my life. For me, like Mandy said in her testimony, she's proof that you can raise a child in the way of the Lord and they will stick with it. And in a lot of ways, I did, but it also required, like Peter and John and Doug have talked about, the choice to be sanctified and to grow closer to the Lord and not leave. I didn't physically leave. I've been here the whole time. But mentally and emotionally, there were definitely time periods that I was not here at church and that I was not dedicated to the Lord and I was not doing what he wanted. And each time the Lord was gracious enough to draw me back and to remind me of who he was and who I was in him. And another layer of that is that when we moved here after Pine Bluff, and I was here for most of my teen year, or all of my teen years, I was very heavily discipled by many, many people in our church, some of whom are gone now. But there was no shortage of opportunities for me to be discipled by men and women, by pastors and not pastors, by teachers in our school and not. And I really took advantage of as many of those as I could. And I plugged in as many ways as I could. And I got to know a lot of the older generation as much as I possibly could. And then when my heart and my mind were elsewhere and I wasn't dedicated to the Lord actually used that a lot to bring me back, to say, now, you know what Miss Rachel would say if she saw you right now. Oh, I should probably stop that, huh? Oh, you know what, you know, Miss Debbie would say about that. Okay, now you know better. Brother Pat will hit you upside the head if you don't get straight. No, he wouldn't, actually. But, you know, the Lord really used that. He used my relationships with the people in our church, not just my parents, but everybody, to really pull me back and hold me close. And so to everybody with kids, let me tell you now, I'm here to do that for your kids. I want to develop really good relationships with them. I want to disciple them. I want them to know and be connected to our church. And I know I'm not the only one. There are a lot of other young adults who grew up in our church. We're not young anymore. But we all feel the same way. We did not leave because we were plugged in. And we want your children to be plugged in as well. I'm going to hand it over to him.
So my name's Keith Wiggins. This is kind of a lot of you should know me, but this is a good overview of introductions. I was born in California, going all the way back, and in a Fontana, Southern California suburb. And I was the third son, and my children, my parents realized that they didn't want to raise their kids. They were living kind of a fast life and did some things they weren't proud of and wanted to move away and had some ties to Arkansas, where my grandparents were retiring in Heber Springs. And we moved when I was two and to Fayetteville. So I grew up in Fayetteville. My dad became a minister in the Methodist church. So my whole life from that point on was being moved around. I moved, I think 15 different schools in all of my schooling from just in the area of Northwest Arkansas. We moved to Boston, so I got to it was a good experience. I like the South better. People are nicer here, but some great history up there. I enjoyed that experience. Moved from Boston back to Gravette, so 4 million people to 1,000. that was crazy. And then I graduated high school in Rogers, and then decided to go to college at Conway at Hendricks, where it was a fairly liberal school. This whole time, I'm growing up in the Methodist Church. The Methodist Church, as I understood it, you never know if you were going to go to heaven. You didn't know. You just hope that your good outweighed your bad. And there was very little really taught in the church. It was just like, feel good. You went to church that 1 hour, and then you go back to acting like the world. And you never knew. And that was big to me, that like, well, you can't know. I mean, you'll never know. And I tried to be better than, you know, my friends. I wasn't the worst. Anyway, when I went to college, I was kind of with a bad group, made some decisions that I'm not proud of, got into drugs and alcohol. I was pretty good in high school, but we got to college and was away from my family, away from, you know, some of the better influences. And I was on my own down there in Conway and made some bad choices. I don't blame any of the people I was with. I made those choices. And eventually moved and transferred. I was majoring in physics at the time, came back to the University of Arkansas, lived with some of those same friends, and switched to food science, got my degree in food science. It's a miracle that I finished my degree because I was still in a lot of those sins. At that point, I was working at the lab at University of Food Science, and I was working with Robert Story and Josh Saldivar. And I was still, my dad was a preacher at Central Methodist. He got let go, and I can tell more about that in a later time. But I always went to the church. It was like my dad's church. I even said, like, that's my dad's church. I never really said, that's my church, like, growing up. And so that went away. And so I was at this point where I still liked going to church. I still felt like I should go to church. Well, I didn't have a church. So I was like that perfect person that comes to you and says, hey, do you know of a good church? It's like the perfect pitch. And Robert Story and Brother Josh were really great. They're like, yes, we totally have a wonderful church here at Mission Boulevard. We'd love to have you. And quickly got here. And the first time I was in this building, there was an overwhelming feel of love. I've never felt in a church before, where I could see that people really cared about me. Pardon me. So that was my first interaction was very different from my other churches, where it was very timed. You know, 11 to 12 people were in their seats, and at 12 it was like the football game and everyone's out. And so it was a different experience. People were talking to me. Probably a good chance for the Pat asked me for lunch at his house. I quickly got into Bible study with Brother Rick. And so Brother Rick was the one that worked with me. And very quickly, I came to the realization that you can know, and I don't want to misquote it, but the verse, John 5:24, it's actually the first verse that I had on here, that same chapter. It says, verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. And all those tenses, as I began to learn, are all very important and tell you that you can know right now that you have it and you will have it continually. And so on July 11th, 2002, when I was 22, I came to know the Lord in my apartment after the Bible study with Brother Rick. And I had actually stopped doing drugs like weeks before because of some issues with the law, which I don't want to get into right now. But I made decisions prior to this point to stop doing those things. It was the Lord working. And then when I came here, it was just this complete shift of my focus. I left my other friends, which is huge when I talk to RU, which is their principle 6, that those who do not love the Lord will not help you serve the Lord. Mm-hmm. And getting plugged in, removing those old friends, and getting, I was active in like every single ministry that our CDM had. There was something on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And it was just surrounding myself with saved people that did things that didn't involve alcohol or drugs, and they had fun, and it was just a really great experience and time of growth. And that was back in 2002, which also means that I stopped doing that about 20 years ago. I'm sober. So thank you. And I think that is where I'm going to pass it back to Adriel.
So earlier in March of 2022, a guy I had been talking to online for many years, and I was bound and determined to marry, came to Fayetteville and visited me for my birthday, and immediately everyone hated him. That's not really an exaggeration. I think Paul and Ethan both did a very good job of displaying self-control, not hitting him in the face multiple times. But he came to campus stuff with me, and he met all my friends, and Lucy was my best friend at the time, and she was next to me, and she just kept going, this is all wrong. And then he went back home. And then a week later, he broke up with me because he found the love of his life, and he was going to marry her. She lived in Texas. She looked just like me. So I was very brokenhearted and distraught because, like I said, I knew I was going to marry him. That was who God wanted me to marry. He worked for the Gideons, so therefore he must be a really strong Christian, right? And that the beginning of that summer at church camp, Brother Rick spoke on the love of God. That was our theme for church camp that year. And after the first opening night, I got my little girls home to the cabin, and I put them to bed, and I went out and sat on the porch, and I sobbed. And Miss Colleen came along, and she sat by me, and she was like, "What's up?" And I said, "How can I teach God's love to these little girls when I don't even feel it?" And she said, "It doesn't matter whether or not you feel it. He said he loves you. Therefore, he loves you." I would like now, in retrospect, to say that was a very E comment, Miss Colleen. I appreciate it very much. This S did not associate it. I couldn't understand it. I'm a very emotional person, and that was the anathema, okay? But the Lord really, he really worked on me that night, and he pretty much told me, it's time for you to focus on me. It's time for you to stop wandering around doing your own thing. Like I said, this is one of those times that I was mentally and emotionally somewhere else. And he really drew me back. And that night, he asked me to recommit to him. And I said, okay. And he said, and the first thing you're going to give up is guys. And I, you know, being someone who really liked guys, had a real issue with that. But I said, okay. So when a few weeks later, I'm up in choir, and this guy walks in the back door, and my brain fell into an old habit that it had of every time I met someone new, I'd go, oh, maybe that's who God has for me. And the Lord said, you just promised me. And I said, okay. I won't think about him. I won't pay attention to him. I'm going to pay attention to you. Well, then later that weekend, the CDM went to the lake and went water skiing with Zach's boat. And we all met at the church and carpooled out there. And I got in the truck that had the Wiggins brothers, Keith and his brother John. And we just talked all the way there and all the time there and all the way back. And I left very much with the impression that they were really great guys that I was not allowed to be with because the Lord wanted me to focus on him. John left with the impression that I was who he wanted to marry. And Keith left with the impression that he really liked me, but John liked me, so therefore he would step back. So fast forward a couple of years and a whole lot of up and down and all over the place. John went to my dad and asked if he could court me. And my dad said, no, you've got a little bit of growing up to do. And so a few more months passed. And then there came a night, it was in October, I think, that suddenly the print ministry that we went to every Thursday night, we decided not to go. But we didn't decide that until we were in the church parking lot. I'm not entirely sure what happened to everybody else, but Keith and I were sitting there going, well, if we're not going to do print ministry, what are we going to do? And he said, well, Windsor has a concert tonight at the Walton Arts Center. You want to go to that? And I said, sure. So we went to the Walton Arts Center, and we were early because, you know, we met in time for print shop, not in time for the concert. And we walked through Walton Arts Center's garden, and he had some really tough questions for me, like why certain people in our church hated me, because I was a teenager with them, and they grew up with my attention on them, and of course they didn't like me, because I wasn't the same person anymore. But I think that conversation went a long way for the two of us seeing each other for real, like not just as someone in the campus that we hung out with and we did a lot of ministries with, but like who we were at our hearts. And so when a couple of weeks later, there came a night that, again, there was nothing that we were doing because, like he had said, literally with campus, we had something going on every single day. There was not a single day for over a month straight that we did not see each other just in the general course of ministry. And there was nothing going on that night for campus-wise. And I was just thinking, I kind of wish I could see Keith tonight, but, you know, there's nothing going on. When he called and he said, hey, I don't have anything to do tonight. What are you doing? And I said, well, my brothers are playing basketball at FCS. So he showed up and brought some other campus people, and we all watched basketball together. And then we went back to my parents' house and had chili. That night, Keith and my dad spoke, and Keith said, may I court your daughter? And my dad said, okay. So that was the official beginning.
Said, okay.
He also had some other rules and things to say. So that began, we courted for less than 6 months and then got engaged, but then we were engaged for a year and a day, and I do not recommend that to anyone. Do not be engaged that long. Be engaged long enough to put the wedding together, and that's it. The reason why was because my dad was deployed, and so we wanted to wait for my dad to get back. But then Keith's parents were about to move to Africa to be missionaries, so we wanted to have our wedding before they left. So there was a very narrow window in which we could get married. So we had to wait for that window.
And I asked you maybe sooner than maybe I should have, but it was on April Fool's Day, so I thought it was funny.
That's a whole other story that's very interesting, and if you want
it. I think it was funny. I don't know if she thought it was that funny.
It was funny, but not at the time. So... Anyway, so we got the only advantage of being engaged for an entire year was that we picked Brother Rick as our marriage counselor because he'd already been discipling Keith through all of this. And he did something for us that I don't know if it would work for every couple, but it was perfect for us. Every month he would hand us a book and he'd say, read this and we'll discuss it next month. And we read it together every night, and then we talked about it, and then we'd come back and meet with him, and we discussed it, and he'd hand us the next book. And after a year of books, we had worked through all kinds of issues from our personal past, but also our family generational issues. We were very able to identify that alcoholism had been huge in my mother's family, and was not as huge but an issue in Keith's family. We were able to see that the physical and verbal abuse from my mom's family was not something that either of us had dealt with, but that we could easily fall into if the right pressure was put onto us. We also identified that our families were terrible with money. Bankruptcy was a frequent thing in Keith's family, and just being so poor we didn't have anything was a frequent thing in my family. And that wasn't just our parents, okay? I'm not saying I love you, Mom and Dad. It wasn't just our parents. It went back generations of that. So that there were several different things that we put on our list of things that we wanted to fix, the different cycles that we wanted to break. And also we identified some things like my parents really grounding us in the truth and teaching us how to filter everything through the Word of God that we wanted to continue on and to give to our children. With Keith's family, there was a lot of love for their children, no matter who they were and what their issues were, because, I mean, there were some issues. So that was something we definitely wanted to pass on to our children as well. But we spent a lot of time that first year of engagement sitting down and analyzing a lot of that stuff and then making choices based on that. That year we were engaged, and then the first year we were married, both of us worked really hard to get out of debt. He had a lot of student loan debt. I had a lot of every other kind of debt. I'd quit school, so at least my student loan debt wasn't horrible, but... I had a lot of other debt because I had cars that kept blowing up. So we worked really hard to get out of debt. And then we bought a house and had Laura, and kind of became lax because we were mostly out of debt. Not really, but mostly. It wasn't quite as bad. The pressure wasn't quite as heavy on us. And eventually we made some choices that put us right back into debt. So I'm not going to continue on with that right now. We are speaking in the couples ministry on the 18th and...
The 25th.
And the 25th, so the next two Sunday nights. And we will actually be giving a full version of our financial history and what we went through and the choices that we made for our family to break the financial cycle. And then also to give you all some tools. It's just an intro. It's only 2 weeks, but I hope it will be a blessing and enlightening to those who need it. But that I'm not saying our marriage has been perfect or our lives have been perfect, because they've not been. No. We continued to make bad decisions from time to time, and we continued to not live a fully sanctified life from time to time. But every time the Lord was gracious enough to draw us back and to prod us just right, to make us see what we were doing wrong and how it was affecting not only our lives and our ministries, but also the lives of our children. And one of the greatest things that we've had, one of the greatest tools we've had, is not just the church, but also the school. Because we're plugged in at the school and daily ministering to the lives of young children, there is a heavier mantle of responsibility on us than just our children, that we want to make sure that we are passing on to them the knowledge that they can choose to do what's right, that they can choose to follow the Lord, that they can choose to do what he wants them to, that they can choose to have a life that's not only free from, you know, extreme things like drugs, but also free from some of the sneakier chains like financial debt or just incorrect thinking about yourself. And so it has been a great blessing for us to be part of the school, to have that sense of accountability and the people at the school who keep us accountable, so that, you know, no matter how stupid we are, the Lord brings us back and reminds us not to be stupid. So is that it?
I had a couple things, just I couldn't interrupt. I wanted to mention that during the time of our long engagement and it was courting, that every time we interacted, like 99% of the time, there was other people or family members there. And I really encourage that. If there's any young people, they're looking to get in a relationship, don't do a lot of stuff all by yourself. It'll mm-hmm. lead to problems. But if you're surrounded by your friends and your family and you're going out as groups, it is way better. And not doing anything physically until after marriage, God will bless that tremendously. Mm-hmm. And then once I got saved, I've already mentioned that we were plugged in, and I can't encourage that enough. That if you are feeling like you're not growing, or you're not, maybe the Lord's not using your gifts like you think he should, then just get plugged in. Just find out where there's a need. There was a need for a biology teacher at the school back in 2005, I think. 2004. I'm really bad with dates. I was like, I'm gonna let Adriel do all that. So I've been teaching at the school since 2004. Started in biology, then switched to physics. And I've been there ever since. And like having that, jumping in, trying to be part of the choir, if you have a gift, utilize it, and then when you have a little bit of responsibility, it helps to encourage you to always be here and to always get plugged in. And if you just sit on a pew, it's easier to just all of a sudden not be on the pew anymore. So just get plugged in. Everyone's got gifts, and I think we are a very busy church. I love how active our church is and all different ministries going on. It's not just come in, sit for an hour, and leave and never see anyone again. And so it's a blessing that the Lord has placed us here, and it definitely was the Lord placing us here and blessing us with a home just down the road, so we can also be close to help out with Adriel's family. And it's definitely just the Lord's blessing. There's a whole big story of our house, but that's not for this time.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Amen.
We're glad you joined us for our services here at Mission Boulevard Baptist Church. We look forward to having you join us again online, but you are always welcome to personally attend any of our services at the Mission Boulevard Baptist Church here in Fayetteville, Arkansas.